everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse, your looking glass into the China startup scene from makers and movers on the ground. I'm your host, Ryan Shukin, and today we are talking about the next generation of work, Work 3.0. We're talking about Code Bunker, which is the premier co-working, co-living, co-learning space in Shanghai for international coders. If you want to learn about what new trends are happening in co-working and co-living, this is it. This is the episode. We talk and sit down with Fred Bazin and Ricky Ngiadam, who are the founder and co-founder of this. And they have built something so special that works off of a community aspect with peer mentorship for learning and finding projects that you love and kindness, that this could be the next big thing in work. Next big thing for all different types of marketing, and how corporates and other types of businesses are getting a huge benefit for this, and it's opening up the door to so much more opportunity. In this episode, absolutely love what this has, and I just can't wait to get into it. I'm also joined by Oscar Ramos, and without any further ado, let's just get into it. Cheers, guys. Hey, everybody. We are here with our two amazing guests, Fred Bazin and Ricky Ngiadam. Fred is from France, from a small town, and you've been in China for 10 years, been coding all your life, and you've been building technology, telecom in the past, and now doing Coder Bunker with Ricky, who also similar background, coding all your life. You were working with Google. You're working with one of the teams, which team at Google?
Oh, the test engineering team.
Test engineering team. Then you came to Shanghai, and that's when you were doing Xingshejian, which is a very well-known, famous co-working.
Probably the first makerspace ever launched in China.
Yeah, first makerspace launched in China.
The first public one. They had like some spaces before, but yeah.
Yeah.
The first really open one.
Yeah, and Coder Bunker, which is something that you guys are, you know, founder and co-founder here, that you've built a community of the premier foreign international coding space in Shanghai. If you are from anywhere in the world and you are coming to China, coming to Shanghai, this is your hub. This is your landing zone. It's got so much to offer in terms of community and space, and you guys have built something quite special. And so this is why we're really excited. So thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Ricky, Fred, welcome to the show. Everybody's talking about community right now. Seems that it's the fashion war where everybody's trying to build communities. There's no longer groups, there's no longer offices. Everybody's for community. So what does community mean in Coder Bunker?
So Coder Bunker as a community of software developers. So the key insight, I think, is that software development is a social activity, which might sound strange when you think like about coders and like in front of their computers writing code. But actually, when you build software, it's definitely a multidisciplinary activity where you need to bring a wide set of skill, wide range of people from UX, UI designers to database administrators to backend engineers to machine learning experts. So these kind of things require social connection, right? So we work as a group. So we favor. So the benefit here at Coder Bunker is a focus on co-working, for example, where we work next to each other. So we establish and maintain these connection between people, which makes the work possible, right? And collaborative. So in our community, we offer services as freelancers. So there's a number of people coming, but they're instead of being standalone, they work as a team. So again, that social connection. The community comes from there, right? So beyond the work, then they also, there's a co-working aspect, there's a collaborative working, collaborative learning, and even thanks to the facilities of my co-founder, Frederick, who's the founder of Agoraspace, the co-living is also another aspect where so people live there, learn there, work there, also launch ventures in that space. And that's where we talk about community.
Yeah. So one of the key things for communities and one of the big challenges is you have this community that shares values, that have a way to work together, to collaborate. And if you are an open community and more people can come from the outside, how do you make sure that people that is becomes part of the community maintains these values and that become are better and stronger and does not like become like a rotten apple that can make everything
so
go
that,
bad?
That's actually very interesting. And I think like I'm very open and I invite everybody to the community. But then Fred is my enforcer, right? Like you will, like he,
that's where you have co-founders. You're looking to have like bad cop, good cop.
Exactly, and he will instantly detect like if someone doesn't fit in the community. This has been quite interesting, where he's just ejecting people out of the space because they don't fit and they don't. It doesn't work out. So I think he's maintaining that community balance pretty well. So right, Frederick, did you know you were the enforcer? Like bad cop. Like,
and you're an international community, so you're working with people from all over the world. How many nationalities do you have right now in the space?
I couldn't say. I think 30, 40, I don't know.
So really, very international.
Very huge diversity.
Where the cultural background sometimes is difficult to evaluate. What are the traits of a person that would be a fit for a collaborative developer community?
I think the key is just to be, for the first thing is to be kind, to be genuinely kind. If you come here and you want to be nice to other people, genuinely nice, not just polite, not just creating respectful barrier, but genuinely want to help and help people to solve a problem, make people feel good around you, then there's very little chance that this will not work out. Yeah, maybe some people are very loud. Maybe some people have different personality that create conflict or confusion. But if you're well-intended, it's not going to work out. It's just happened, I think, one time that we have to leave one guy that was well-intended. Couldn't control himself. He was an entrepreneur working super hard on his project. And we asked him, he's too loud. And the next day, he opened the phone with a speaker on his desk in the middle of open space. He couldn't control himself. He was so in pain and in struggling for his own business. He couldn't change his habit. But usually, it's about the working style in terms of noise and phones and stuff like that. And the intent to be kind to people around you. If you really want to have, why wouldn't it work, right? Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to Coder Bunker, I think then the follow-up is on top of that, right? So you're in a co-working space and you're respectful and generous to other people. And then for Coder Bunker, I think the profile we're looking for is people that want to grow, right? It's really growth-focused. Yeah. So people that are coming, the profile that's coming in the community is learners.
And these are people who want to learn. So like you are helping develop and build people's careers, their livelihood. They are learning to code in your sessions and your work, and then they are getting jobs through your community and with your values, which you help them, right?
They're not getting jobs. They're getting projects.
They're getting projects.
So they're joining projects, they're joining teams, and there's no clear boundary about having a job. They don't report to one job, to one boss. They serve one project. I'm on this project. I'm going to try not only to help the project owner, but help the teammate that are my coworkers, that are the people I hang out with every day. I'm going to help them go through it. Because they're gonna give back.
Is this all remote? Are most of these, like, if you were to categorize kind of projects that people are working, are most of these projects remote projects, or are they all in Shanghai? Are these teams?
Most projects are local. Remote projects doesn't work very well unless you invest the time building the relation, flying, spending, sitting together. But you need to build a physical connection because the things we were discussing earlier about being kind and really generously trying to help out the other people. If you don't have physical connection, if you didn't have a meal together, how can you care so much about these people?
Exactly. I like this a lot because when you guys are talking about community, you're talking about the aspects in which people connect and work and business. I strongly believe that it's all about people in the end. You know, most teams fail for startups because of people issues, not because of the business or other things. They do sometimes, but it's really mostly because people and teams just splitting up or not being happy. And a lot of that has to do values and communities. And when you have someone there and you're having a community around you, I think it's really kind of taking care of the people first. And then when people feel like they're taken care of, then it's the project, then it's the company, then it's the business. And you might be helping create more successful businesses through that.
Yeah.
I think in that case, you're putting a lot of pressure on the founder of a startup. When you launch your startup, you have all the pressure to figure out how to survive next week. And you need to make people happy, give them a good environment and all this thing. That's too much. So co-working solves part of it. Creating a work environment, you don't need to manage that. Then, if a coffee sucks, it's not the responsibility of your founder anymore. You remove some responsibility. So, besides that, basics of co-working in general, I think we're working on two things. One is like through the co-working infrastructure, mm-hmm. creating some kind of parallel or overlapping communities focused on very small things, mm-hmm. music, food, whatever. Mm-hmm. Just create a platform when we help people connect on the things that make them happy. Yes. And we just support that. We don't try to create any kind of a branding or ownership on all these small things. Just let people do their thing and be happy with it, right? And mm-hmm. on the same time, part of joining the community for Codabunker, you have all a process of enrollment, joining workshops, joining different activities to get familiar with the environment, and step by step, receiving training, receiving guidelines, receiving material.
And you were saying it's like these are individuals that are working on projects that they love. That's what you were saying. It's a little bit earlier when we weren't recording, but the way that you phrase that, it actually speaks to me a little bit, because we're working in a very, let's say, there are more startups, there are more projects, and there's a more demand for people who can help build code than ever before.
Yeah.
And the management practices from people who are eccentric explorer founders trying to build teams, and the demands on technology to be built fast and accurately, all this stuff, usually there's not enough support for the full team or the people there. And I just kind of see this as like a haven, like a safe place for the technological aspect of those products or those ideas, those people that are getting the support in a way that you probably actually couldn't give in a normal startup environment.
Yeah, I think the leadership aspect is really important,
yeah.
and technical. And also, I think there's a lot of psychological barriers, right? Lots mm-hmm. of EQ issues, like emotional yes. quotient issues that need to be resolved for the developers. And sometimes it's just even in terms of self-confidence, right? People like developers at the beginning when they... You know, they're very, sometimes very competitive, and they see like, oh, I've encountered this problem. I'm stuck on it. Like, I mm-hmm. must be stupid. I must be like, and they start beating themselves down. And then you have to tell them like, look,
totally.
If you persist, our experience mm-hmm. is you will find a way, right? And just telling them that and supporting that through that process to bring our experience is helpful, right? In that sense, then especially when you're facing a high pressure environment like a startup.
So you really look like Oasis, like something absolutely different than what you normally see in the whole environment of the Chinese tech ecosystem. Yeah. So first of all, you have 30 nationalities inside your office, whereas in a lot of technology companies, you have mainly like Chinese developers,
yeah.
like huge majority of them. You have it seems that you have an environment that is healthy to work, whereas we're talking about the 996 concept.
Mm. And 9 a.m., 9 p.m., 6 days a week.
Yeah. So that's a typical schedule in a Chinese startup. So one of the key problems that a lot of Chinese startups have or they complain about is lack of talent. Mm. And when they talk about lack of talent, they're not just talking about lack of developers. They talk about actually lack of good, experienced developers. Mm-hmm. How does your community, what's the feeling in your community? What is the profile of the people that joins the community besides being foreigners?
We have all range of age in terms of experience. For some people 30 to 40 years old, some of them just barely started coding a couple of years ago. Some of them are very senior. We have very young people just mm-hmm. graduate from university. So diversity of a profile is pretty broad, but this lack of experience or seniority you meet in startup is, if you want to capture a senior as part of your startup is not going to survive in 3 months. How do you convince this guy to give up his comfortable income, his comfortable life to be dedicated full time to your startup? It's not going to work.
Yeah.
So the problem is the work contract, full time employment is not a good solution for work in general, and is a terrible solution for startup in particular. So as long as you want to capture people as your full-time employee, it's not going to work. Try to find a different ways to connect people and build your team.
And I think it's really interesting because a lot of the, let's say, money is spent for early stage startups that do get investment without product fit. They spend it on building a product and hiring full-time coders for things that have not been proven that people want to buy yet.
Exactly. Quick pivot, right?
Yes.
So you'll keep changing. So the person that you hired as a mobile developer, and actually you realize this would be better as a web developer.
But they're full-time. And why would I want to change?
They already have a work contract. And so you're stuck with that technology stack, right? So
and this is a really interesting thing. But a part of me is also at odds because I'm not technical. I'm the explorer, CEO founder guy who's like, we're going to get everyone to follow us and they're just going to be so passionate. And if you're not going to follow us, then I don't know if you should be there. But I love the focus on community, but I also feel like, how do these projects fare when you have the support or you're forcing more of a process on this? Are we losing some of these crazy ideas, or are we getting more good ideas, social or real world proof, because of this? Did you get any like lashback or any criticism over this kind of structure?
I think the biggest challenge for us is find the project owner who really have good product management skill.
Mm.
And we're very careful about enforcing that with all the people we collaborate with, make sure they can do it. Eventually, we can compensate, we can provide a product owner or a product manager on our side. But until you have a product market fit,
mm-hmm.
then it's like the product manager should become the entrepreneur. How can you get somebody yeah. serving you, but take the lead against your own vision to figure out the right market fit? I don't see how this could work. Like, we had a few failures with people who mm-hmm. couldn't do good product management.
Mm-hmm.
What are normally the profiles of the people that is leveraging like Coder Banker community to find talent?
People who understand the cost of engineering is complicated and is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So if they tried hard enough, if they had a team of 10 engineers, if they've tried several things, building a startup, if they try several suppliers, hiring several people in their team, and they realize it takes some time, it takes some effort. And when you try to compromise on the people you work with, you get catastrophic result, because after 6 months or 1 year of dream, you just threw away everything and start again.
Yes.
Right. So it takes some maturity, some experience in the tech industry to appreciate the result they get with us.
Yeah. And I think we've been very open about encouraging, you know, the companies we support to hire and mix in with the developers, because generally we work on site, right? It's not remote work. So mm-hmm. we can create a team with a mix of employees or full-timers and mm-hmm. freelancers. And we definitely need someone on their side that's really strong at leading. Otherwise, we have to provide that person. And then there's a feeling that, oh, there's bias, right? Mm-hmm. But generally we want to integrate to the team. But I think the fact is most of these entrepreneurs or even managers in big companies face like large challenges of getting people, right? Mm. And why is that? Because talented people get hired in corporate companies, right? And they get very good benefits and very good. Then they get close to these boxes. They're in these enclosed boxes mm-hmm. that are not accessible to the startups, right?
Yeah.
To the small companies, to other companies, right? So you have this like opaqueness to the talent and you have difficulty reaching it. So what we're trying to create with Coder Bunker is a way for this talent to make a good living, okay? The same kind of living they would make in a corporate world, but helping a wider range of projects and ventures, right?
So this is literally the future of work in action. Yeah. And you just mentioned yes. that this is not something that is only for startups, but big companies are also working on that. Are these companies from companies that do have a technology background? Are they international companies, local companies? Who are these big companies that, because startups tend to be early adopters sometimes because there's no other option. You need to be more efficient, so you need to do things. You need to adopt the new ways of doing things to be competitive. But big companies sometimes, when they really start adopting something, that's where the change is happening.
Absolutely.
So who are the profile of these companies that in China are adopting and new ways of interaction?
One of our success story is Louis Vuitton Moinessi, right? So it's the largest conglomerate of luxury brands in the world. And they needed to build a digital team in China, right? Mm-hmm. So they were looking for a number of people to be able to get started very quickly and build solutions for their brand. So there's like maybe 50 brands, right?
More than 80 brands
inside the LVMH conglomerate. So they're trying to bring some of that expertise for the engineering internally. Now, of course, LVMH doesn't have a engineering DNA, right? They do try to build that internally, mm-hmm. but it's difficult for them to get the right people in the right mix. So we were lucky enough, I think, in that the success story, part of the reason there is we have a very good, there's a full-time person there, Marcus at LVMH, who is very experienced and knows like the realities of software development and is very good leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to have access to Coder Bunker and have resources whenever he needs, it's very advantageous, right? So he turns around and he's like, oh, we need this and this and this, and we can provide him the resources and make him faster. Mm-hmm. So that's where the success is, right? So if you're a big company and your DNA is not engineering and you'd like to get the number of people that have shared engineering practices mm-hmm. and some experience working together and some amount of leadership on their side, and you have a continuous intake. If you imagine Coder Bunker as your recruiting facility, right? It's a community, it's attracting great people, they love the environment, and then they're willing to join these projects. They're much more open. It's much easier sell to do that than like reaching out to Lincoln and like saying, hey, I'm a recruiter. Like
talking about the future of work.
Right.
I think that's a really great thing to just keep on. Yeah. Is this, in your opinion, the future of all work? Will there be a village of marketers just like this, and a village of, you know, advertisers, and then everyone, every possible kind of position or specialty would benefit from this? What do you guys believe?
I don't think you will get a silo with like one box for marketers, one box for technology and stuff like that. The purpose of going through freelancing, through communities, through network is that you don't have such a strict boundary about who is a good fit, who is not a good fit for the community, who is an employee, or who is just a subcontractor, who is an outsourcing company, who is mm-hmm. an agency. All of these things that are solved by outsourcing today with agencies or independent freelancer. That's what we're resolving. That's why we're industrializing. We're removing the barrier, no sales, no time spent on sales for adding one more person, no time spent on HR.
Is this the future for not just coding, but also for marketing and different types of specialties, like SEO specialist?
Any kind of work, like in my career as an employee in 10 years, I've seen countless waste of people. You know, if you spend half of your day as an employee dealing with the tasks that fit your expertise, mm-hmm. then you're very lucky, because most of the time we put on the job people who are underqualified or overqualified, and it's created a lot of frustration because you're not allowed, or it's very complicated in a company to buy services, to buy something outside, but wasting the time of very qualified people is fine mm-hmm. because you're in charge of keeping them busy.
I love it.
So I want to go deeper into something that you mentioned earlier. When people think about the future of work, the first idea they picture is, okay, I can be on a tropical beach anywhere I want, and I can be working on this project remotely. And you mentioned, both of you actually mentioned, you emphasize the fact that you work on site. It's not that you just work like in the same city, it's that you work on site. What are the reasons why you think this is the best way for your model?
To clarify, we do have people working on the beach right now, right? Lucas is one of our DevOps is in
Thailand.
He's in Thailand,
but there's no beach around.
There's no beach. Okay, well, the difference is you spend quite a bit of time with Lucas face to face, right? So what they're saying is not that you can't be remote. Some people are very effective remotely, and Lucas is an example of that. But to get there, you mm-hmm. need to establish a personal connection.
And that idea is an exception. It's not the rule.
Yeah, it's an exception to some. I don't know that most people are very effective working on the beach.
So it is a process. It's not something that we're social people naturally, and we know we interact offline since we're born. But the online interaction is something that it's not 100% natural for most people. What about digital natives? I mean, you see younger people that are like natively born in a digital environment where they embrace technology earlier. Do you see a faster path to adoption of remote working?
I think we've seen some of these digital nomads walking in the space and be ready to start working right now. But it's not just about being digital native. It's because they acquire a certain level of maturity in their relation to work. And like this guy we were mentioning earlier was in Thailand. It doesn't need much mentoring at this point. So he's doing things where he's very capable, and he spent 1 or 2 years building the relation with people around him. So, and he comes back. Mm-hmm. He comes back. He was gone 3 months, spent a week with us, and go back for a couple of months. And we had another bunch of people spending 1 month and a half on a workation in Southeast Asia. Mm. Ricky was one of them. Mm. So it's no... I don't think it's about the age or the relation to technology. It's about your maturity or your relation to work and your relation to other people. You know, if you can be focused, if you can communicate very clearly mm-hmm. without emotion, then dealing with remote work become more and more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
That growing yourself, dealing with challenging project, there's all kind of reason to face emotion and face the need for support, the need for mentoring.
Yeah, and it's all baked into this, right? That mentoring and that support and that group of peers, like you were saying. Right?
And that's a big pain point we remove from the entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's
because
huge.
The entrepreneur being in charge of, you know, generally the people who are mentoring, they're not the same people that are taking the pressure.
I'm really honestly excited about what you guys are doing, because when you talk about the future of work, when you talk about taking the pressure and allowing there to be a village of coders who are taking products they love, and the way that you're speaking about how they get attached to something and then they move on to a healthy relationship with it, with that just sounds, that feels right. Because I feel like today, a lot of the relationships that are built and how people find coders and how they treat each other, because there's always an aspect when you don't have that structure of, well, I'm doing most of the work in the beginning and what you're doing is not enough, so it's unfair. There's always a conflict, it feels like, between a lot of coders when you don't have that supporter idea. And what you're talking about as this future, this work 2.0, or are we at work 3.0? What is this? I mean, this is a really interesting creative style. And it's just something that I feel, you know, it should just work across multiple verticals. Like, what do you guys see the next application of this? You're working with coders. If you could see this go into another kind of vertical of work, where would you see it going?
So just to mention, we already see it happening for other verticals, right? We do have in our membership for Coder Bunker people that have marketing, PR background, designers.
I think any resource you need for a startup, sooner or later will happen. Mm-hmm. It started with coding for two reasons. First, that's our background. That's our comfort zone. That's what people we know how to deal with. And the second thing, there's such a market imbalance. Like, there's so much demand for coders. So it was easier to impose new idea in this industry than another one, right?
Yeah.
If we want to impose the same rule for English teachers or for masonry, then it's going to take some time, maybe 10 or 20 years. But we're lucky enough to be comfortable in an industry that has a lot of demand. So it's a great chance to try new ideas, to try a new way to do things and push forward, like try test new models. Mm-hmm. But there's no reason why this would not replicate in other disciplines.
So you mentioned you imposed that because there was a lack of talent. The great talent, the good talent, good developers, they wanted to, they were able to impose their rules on how they were working. And now you're bringing this to our industries. Do you see people that originally were not very comfortable working with this model now actually embracing it as something good and being very comfortable bringing this to other areas of the company?
I've not seen a very radical conversion of people from one mindset to the other. What we're seeing is more we were in the early days working with very low budget startups, people who were on the edge of crashing, were ready to try anything to make it up.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're transitioning to more conservative or more traditional clients, PR agencies, digital agencies, mm-hmm. luxury brands. And when we started, we could not pitch this kind of clients to join the product. It was just like the startup, low budget. We need something to survive and to make it through. And we have a couple example of startup that actually went on a very modest budget, very carefully, month by month, investing small pieces here and there to build their product. And 1.5 later, they're blossoming. And one of them just joined China Accelerator.
Nice. So I think that if we talk about the growth of this kind of work model, do you think this could work anywhere in the world? Or do you also, two questions, think there's a reason why it works so well in China or Shanghai?
I think actually for me, from my perspective, it seems that it was harder challenge to do this in Shanghai. Because if you look at it, most of our clients are international companies or mm-hmm. international led startups in China, where the difficulty level is quite high, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then when we're talking to, I think it's much more natural. So we've registered in Canada, in the UK, right? And we're talking with people in Pakistan and Germany to open communities there. So they're mm-hmm. very early on, but I think once people kind of see the model and experience the model, they're very, that's what they want to be doing, right? So in the UK, it's two members that spent quite a bit of time in Coder Bunker, and we built a relationship with them. And when they went back, they're like, I really like to have a Coder Bunker here. I have a co-working space, so that I have some contracts, and so maybe we can build something, right? And then it's building that community. It's having, the only thing that we need in every market is a leader, right? Someone that's really sold on the idea and that's willing to take the leadership and just be part of that network, right? Mm-hmm. And see the benefit of it. And yeah, I think for me, it's just a natural, it should be a worldwide network. And as we grow, I think just the strength of this network would just, you know, just be very, just multiply typically, every time. Network effect.
Demand, right? Is there.
Right. And everywhere. Right.
So the demand's there everywhere.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there is an opportunity for copycats or innovation in this? Are you guys at all worried about other co-working? WeWork being like, okay, we're going to segment into this. Or is there some element that you're not worried? Like, what is the thing that keeps you guys ahead of the game?
Copycat would be a great validation.
Yeah?
Yeah. We welcome them.
That's what everybody said. Huh? Like, the best way of, the best form of appreciation in China is when you get copied. That
yeah.
They and, believe it's good.
For us, actually, it's what we believe is that actually our particular way of doing, our particular community is kind of based on our character and our personalities and our experience, right? And our kind of particular profile. So, of course, this community is not suitable for everybody. Some people will find this community and be like, no, that's not for me. So having a wide range of communities with different signatures, different personalities, leading them is very important, actually, to be enable everybody to collaborate. So, and I think it's more about, like, our next step, actually, is to automate the process.
Yes,
matching,
next step. That's exactly what I was
right,
going to ask.
Freelancer projects, budgets, right, to international licensees to be able to work together. And I'm going to say a word that's become very unpopular, but like blockchain, right? Having a ledger where we can share this transaction. So my plan right now is to copy, like, by not copy, but use the Ethereum technology, run our own chain, and just create the contracts. Exactly how it's supposed to use, right? This whole cryptocurrency was like completely missing the point of smart contracts, enter these agreements very dynamically between people and projects and spend these budgets and do the tracking in an automated way. So we can move away from having to think about the accounting and the matching and just focus on people, right?
Yeah.
And find these people that are most suitable to your project wherever they are, right, in the world. And at that point, we can bring in even other communities to join this network, right?
Yeah.
And now, more than welcome.
That's going to be a powerful combination when we get more communities into this. Because I'm really curious on the factor. Because I imagine co-working spaces, typically you'll have all these companies working together, and you'll have every company's got a developer. But is that developer working on a challenge really talking to the person next door in that co-working space? Probably not. That's why accelerators and incubators do so well, is because they are mixing pots for ideas and experience. And imagining all the marketing people in the building, the co-working space that we're in today, talking and sharing would be a value. Imagine all of the developers talking and sharing and being feeling more part of it. Because right now, everyone's got their, you know, rule. I was reading a thing and it said, hey, it was like starter pack for startups. And it was, you know, first buy swag with a logo and wear that all the time. Wear a t-shirt with your logo on it and identify who you are and all that kind of stuff. Then, you know, have pizza parties and costumes and XYZ. But all these things, they seemed fun, but they weren't what you guys are talking about. They weren't the community aspect, because people run into problems, especially in early stage projects and growth. And to have that support just seems, it just makes so much sense. It's the thing that makes all these accelerators and other incubators work. That I think co-working and that you guys, the way that you're putting it together is really beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's really people-centric, which I am in love with the idea. I love every time you keep on saying it's about people. It's about treating them fairly. It's about kindness.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting to the end of the show.
Sure.
And I want you guys to plug yourselves. How do these interested you know, developers or people who are going to be have ideas for projects find you? How do they find out more? How do they get connected with these incredible community that you have? You know, take it away. How do people find you?
Well, it's a quite a big piece, right? Because we've got three layers to our community. Mm-hmm. So for people that are starting and learning and need a space to work. So we've got a grass space, co-working space, and we've got our workshops at layer one. Layer two is if you've been funded and mm-hmm. you need to build your team to start mm-hmm. tomorrow, you come to us with your budget and it's a prepaid budget every month, right? You set the amount and we provide resources for that. That's mm-hmm. layer two. Layer three, what we're missing is actually a large capital backing mm-hmm. so that we can immediately provide. So having product owner come in, we provide the engineering and mm-hmm. the capital comes in an iterative way, right? So that we can build these ventures. So those three things, I think it's addressed to very different people, right?
What's the website or email that they can inquire about those three things?
Well, they're free to go on coderbunker.com, right? Or follow our WeChat or Facebook or LinkedIn. LinkedIn is probably better. So you can get in touch. Go to LinkedIn, look for Coderbunker, get in touch with us. Frederick is Agora Space, right? Agora-space.com, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you check out their space. Come see us at the community. We're pretty open generally.
Cool.
Welcome.
How often do you have sessions, like co-learning sessions?
Every Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, we have specific workshops every Saturday, but it's an ongoing process. People who join the space full time, mm-hmm. they're being mentored continuously on their learning path. So anytime.
We also have an innovation boot camp planned for April. So we're getting a number of engineers coming from Switzerland as a group. Mm-hmm. They are apprentices in companies and we want to match them to entrepreneurs for a week and go from problem identification to pitch. So we're hoping to get
incredible.
Pick up on that.
Awesome. Fred, Ricky, thank you very much for sharing
for
sharing with the world what's Coderbunker and talk about the future of work.
Yeah, the future of work, the idea behind it. It's absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers. And thank you to all of our listeners.
Hey everyone, I just want to take a quick moment to thank our sponsor, China Accelerator. They are an accelerator based in Shanghai, bringing international ideas into China and Chinese ideas international. They're number one in what they do. They're a 3-month program and they help build your idea and make it amazingly successful. You can find out more at www.chinaaccelerator.com. People Squared is the original co-working space in China. It's your home for startups, no matter what you're working on. Small team or large, it has all the resources, the environment, the culture, everything that you need to take your idea and make it successful. Founded by Bob Zheng, an entrepreneur himself who really understands what startups need, it's a great place to bring your team and find success. You can find out more at people-squared.com.